Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me, my beloved co-host. I haven't called him that in a long time.
Yes, and I've missed it. It's hurt, but it's okay. Mike Cosentino sitting next to, we got a silent Gary needs a promotion. Yeah. We are definitely good with a promotion. Bernie. Gary, how are you? Good morning, Bernie.
I'm good.
Nobody
good morning.
We are not a political, we are not a partisan show in any way. Bernie. But go ahead. What are we talking about this morning?
We're talking about oligarchy.
That's
a really cheery. It's a really cheery stuff. A subject. Oligarchy. Actually, the term comes from Aristotle. Aristotle was a one of the greatest of the Greek philosophers, and way 2,000 years ago. And this discussion of oligarchs and democracy begins in ancient Greece. Oligarchy, it's oligos means the few, archy means power. It's the power of
the
few.
Well, there you go.
That's what an oligarchy is. Democracy is a power of the people, right?
Right.
Yeah. And a republic is a structure that controls how democracy works. So right. These are kind of like basic things. The discussion starts thousands of years ago. The problems begin thousands of years ago. Where to start? Well,
yeah.
What are we?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Now, we've done programs before on this, and back in 2014, we did a program on the study of the influence of money in politics. I think there's two levels of this, and I don't know if you guys agree or disagree, but one is the money you see going directly into politics. You know, the Donald talked about it at the Republican debate about how he gave this money and that's how he was buying power. That's how the system worked, according to him. But there's another system, another area, which is structuring the government so that it benefits the rich. And
Donald talked about that, too, because he talked about having filed bankruptcy four times when asked that question. He mentioned that he didn't personally file bankruptcy. He used the system to have his corporations file bankruptcy.
He said some interesting things, yes. The United States, do you have Jimmy Carter's quote?
Yeah.
Because Jimmy Carter is probably the best ex-president the United States has ever had in terms of doing good works and saying things. I don't think he's ever said anything like this before, right, Gary?
Not that I've ever seen it.
You know, I never heard him.
I think everyone knows he's one of the greatest champions of democracy. And he recently, in a radio interview, said, among other things, that the U.S. is now an oligarchy, or oligarchy, I should say. It violates the essence of what made America a great country and its political system. Now it's just an oligarchy with unlimited political bribery being the essence of getting the nominations. And then he went on to say, I think the most stupid decision that the Supreme Court ever made, and one of the most damaging, was to rule that corporations are people and that major corporations now can give unlimited supplies of money to candidates.
So I think at some point we need to talk again about super PACs and PACs. But basically, 400 families, there are 310 million people in the United States, 400 families, right, Mike, have contributed half the money to all the candidates. Half the money comes from 400 families. Well, and usually it's the husband and wife both donating and stuff.
Right.
Now, if you give money to the political party, to the candidate, there's a limitation, $2,700. The very, very rich are not going to stop at that. They never have, but now things are much worse, right?
Right. Yeah, no, that all these caps have been blown off. That's what's going to make 2016. The biggest story in 2016 is not who's going to be running, but who's paying for it?
Right.
That's going to be the big story, and I think we're going to see a lot on it. We're going to see a lot of that. So,
You could almost draw a picture, couldn't you, Mike, of these Republican candidates standing there in the debate, and a picture of the billionaire
yes.
behind them.
Well, you,
you know, you could have little what do you call those?
Sponsored by.
Sponsored by. You know. So you know. Rubio has been sponsored by a single billionaire in Florida since the time he began.
Sure.
In other words, purchased by.
Purchased
invested
by.
Invested in.
Well, that's it. The Internet has the thing that comes around Facebook about every 3 months or so, and that's if politicians wore suits like NASCAR drivers, you know, and like they'd have it
exactly.
over their cars on their suits, and then we'd know. I mean, this would be honesty. This would be at least clear. Who supported them? So the ruling elite, I liked. We have one. This was Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, all those guys. Ben Franklin. This is the worst nightmare. Having this, and they could see it coming, and they could, well, at least they saw the danger. I should put it that way.
Yeah.
That you have the business interests having the politicians work for them. So not only do you have these 400 families running everything as far as business goes and making scads of money, unbelievable. We'll talk about the money itself a little later. But then you have the politicians working for them that they put in place. And whether sometimes one of their children, you know, wants to go into politics, wants to get their hands dirty instead of spending all their time skiing mm-hmm. and doing what I don't know what rich people do.
Morgan Guaranty decades and decades ago when I was 19 years old, I worked where we managed the money of very, very wealthy people. And they had one guy who had billions of bucks and had bearer bonds in those days.
There you go.
And I was told he couldn't sign his name more than 7 times in a row or he would become upset. But this guy's got $1 billion.
So you did some research. You had some guy there that now he talked about what they do. They spend a lot of time protecting their money.
Right. So the professors and the fellow's name, and it's one of these expensive textbooks. Let me look over here. Jeffrey Winters. So
thank you.
If you're an oligarch, one of the things is you have a whole lot of money, and other people don't. You have tons and tons of money and other people don't, and you want to protect your money. Right. So one of the things that he says is that the tax code is a direct reflection of power. You know, and there's two aspects of the tax code. What's happened is, as both Gary and Mike can tell you, is that the taxes on the wealthy have been going down and down. There are two things. They're the official tax rate, and then there's the effective tax rate.
Right.
And then there's the invisible hidden money rate, which it's very hard to quantify. So that's what we're seeing. So if you have all this money, there are two ways to protect it. One is you hire a whole bunch of lawyers and accountants and stuff, and they devise all kinds of clever schemes. This is not like going to H&R Block and asking them to see if you can find you some deduction. This is creating instruments, they call, to make sure that people don't get your money. It's hiding your assets offshore. There's a whole elaborate pattern.
Getting bailouts and other corporate welfare from the government that you bought.
So that's one aspect. You hire all these, I think they're called wealth protectors or something technically. That's one aspect of protecting it. The other aspect is protecting it is politics.
It's politics.
Through buying politics,
stopping them from.
You have to have, because the American people can kind of do anything they want. In other words, American people could expropriate the money of the wealthy. We could be like Venezuela or something. And let's take an example of Honduras. There are 13 families that basically own the country. The Honduran populace could take their property away from it. Chances of this happening in any industrial modern country are about zero. So what you're left is trying to control the tax code, because controlling the tax code controls the amount of power you have.
And the other big change, I have to admit, is media. In other words, as you see once again all over the internet, that it, no matter what you watch, I don't care if you're I like Salon Magazine, you watch CBS, I watch CNN, you watch Fox. It's all controlled by six companies, and the wealthy run that. So they've, as far as I'm concerned, they got the final link in the gate.
Speaking of media, I thought the New York Times made a good point. Is that they said, in an era when a tiny fraction of the country's population has accumulated a huge portion of its wealth, the rich have also been empowered by Citizens United and other changes to spend more on elections. And they go in and further and say that the top donors, to peruse the top donors is to take a cross-section of the wealthiest 1% of Americans. At least 67 are billionaires or married to one.
Yeah. The other thing is that I think we should talk about at some point, maybe in greater length, is that whatever the proposal, the Republican Party is going to tell you that is terrible. If it's going to benefit ordinary people. So increasing Social Security benefits, terrible idea. Increasing medical care to people, going to crash the economy. So they justify, because they can't directly control things. They have to have a populace that, one, is unengaged, doesn't really vote and doesn't think about the issues.
That's right.
So you can't tax oil companies because that'll destroy the energy sector. You can't do anything to control pharmaceutical companies because then we won't produce great drugs to save people. So when you go to, you know, Europe, you'll find things cost, you know, a fifth of what they cost here. But there is everything, every time I believe that you look at a proposal, and I see if you guys agree. The Republican Party claims, and the wealthy claim, that anything you do is going to damage it. High taxes, oh my gosh, if we actually tax the rich, it'll kill jobs.
Minimum wage.
You raise the minimum wage, that's terrible.
That's right.
Everything,
no matter how illogical, and we eat it up. The public eats it up. Oh yeah, we can't tax billionaires because we'll kill jobs. And we buy it. And that's what kills me. How could we buy this crap?
The thing is, they have the control of the microphone. Yeah. They have the money and the control of the microphone. And the American people are pretty disengaged from this. And so it's the people with the biggest microphone. That's why you can make some preposterous charge against some politician. And if you have more money than he does, chances are you can really damage him. But every proposal that would help ordinary people and take any money from the oligarchy, whatever you want to call it, is opposed by Republicans, and they all have a reason. They have to have a reason, folks. In other words, otherwise, they're going to say, like, well, why don't these guys, they got billions of dollars, why don't they pay more taxes? Why do they pay less? Why does Romney pay less taxes as a percentage of his visible income than I do? If you start talking like that, they've got to have reasons, right, Mike, Gary, to explain why you can't do that, why you can't tax them, why you can't control the energy sector, why you can't force the corrupt insurance companies out of the medical insurance business.
They use jobs a lot too, as I think if you look at the Keystone XL pipeline as an example of this kind of influence, they keep expanding or stretching the number of jobs that would be involved. The Keystone Pipeline is nothing more than a Canadian company wanting to put a pipeline across the U.S. and make us take the risk for any oil spills, so they can get their oil refined and on the international market. It doesn't benefit the U.S. There's been studies that show that the actual number of jobs is somewhere around 500, and some people say that even that is stretched, and the risks are tremendous.
They have to pick something that people are afraid of, right, Gary?
Yeah, they always say that well, we need to take the risk because it means jobs for Americans. No, it doesn't.
So jobs, Gary, jobs are what scares people. Mm-hmm. If you say it's going to cut jobs, that scares people into not doing it. If you say minimum wage, raising it, going to cut jobs, that's going to do it. If you say having better Social Security and Medicare is going to hurt jobs, or Obamacare is going to hurt jobs.
Well, you've hit on it. Fear is have you seen the latest Ron Paul commercial?
No.
Oh, you got to check this out. This is right out of McCarthy era. He scares the coming crash. It's coming soon. And this election is going to determine all that. He has I'm not going to waste our airtime by telling you what Ron Paul says on his rather long television commercial, primetime television commercial, that basically is designed to scare people into whatever, voting his way
out. But the right has been complaining since 2008 that everything the president did is going to cause the collapse of the American dollar. It's going to cause high inflation. It's going to cause all these terrible things. And they've been predicting it since 2008, 2009. It's now 2015. And none of these things has happened.
Right.
And even the Social Security is going to collapse. Well, Social Security is slowly getting more stable despite all the baby boomers coming into the system. Medicare had the Medicare costs tend to increase much faster than inflation, but they increase less fast than private insurance. And they've sort of flattened out. So all these predictions, Mike, have been wrong, but why don't they change them?
Because they work, especially short term. One of the other thinkers on
Because they're in their interest, right?
Because they're in their interest. And there's been five times in American history where we've had these dire predictions about eating, shoes that we'll be boiling our shoes to survive, he tracked each one in history. It was fascinating. I wish I'd give you more information on it. But that's what's happening now is we're going to be scared and pulled in every direction between now and November 2016, there's going to be almost no truth and the oligarchy is pulling the strings in every case. Here's our boys. Here's our maybe a girl or two as far as a candidate that works for us. The only thing Trump got right, I refuse to call him the Donald because he likes that, was that the Begathon, going to the Begathon with the Koch brothers Begathon. I circulate a list of Coke products that I don't buy. You know, how can we get them? The only way we can get them, folks, is by not buying their stuff. The only way we can get them is through the economic.
Well, let me ask you this: the estimate, Mike, Gary,
I'm planning the revolution here, and you're
the election. All right, no, this is I want you.
All right,
I want you to deal with this question here because it's apropos to what you're saying.
All right,
and the question is
Bernie,
yes, is that the 2016 election is estimated that there will be $10 billion plus spent on it. Now, Mike, where's that money coming from?
It's with a B, right?
Yeah.
$10 billion
dollars. Did I say million? No, I think you said billion.
I just wanted to make it clear that there was
$10 billion election coming up. It doesn't matter who you are, or, even Bernie's got to come up with some money, Mike.
He does.
Otherwise he can't play. But it's a $10 billion election. The money to run this election has to come from the people in the country, the oligarchy, that has the money.
I'd like to point out a couple of statistics along that line. Bernie, who I am biased towards, has no large donors. Almost all of his money has come from individuals in small amounts.
Unlike Hillary.
Let me go down a list here. If you look at Chris Christie, if you want to know why large corporations and the wealthy donate to campaigns, the largest single donation to Chris Christie's PAC And by the way, most of the money now goes through PACs and super PACs rather than directly to the campaign.
Remember, folks, that super PACs you can give an unlimited amount of money to.
Anonymously as well.
And anonymously, if you so desire. And you can use a combination of PACs and super PACs to disguise almost anything. And we've done a bunch of programs on dark money, how this works, and we should probably do another one again.
But Chris Christie's largest single donor is a Boston investor seeking to build a $4 billion casino resort in New Jersey. There's no self-interest there, is there? If five of Walker's donors are companies that received hundreds of thousands of dollars in aid from Wisconsin's Economic Development Agency.
Aren't the Koch brothers really, isn't he their favorite guy, Scott Walker?
He's one of them. They're hedging their bets, and but yeah, he's
an extremist who said in this debate that he was against abortion even when the mother's life is at stake, and even when the pregnancy is a product of rape. He's an absolutist on this. I suppose he'll jail women and doctors
if you wonder, you know, the largest contributors by far are the Koch brothers. And if you wonder what they're expecting to get out of it, they made all of their money, or the vast majority of it, with oil refineries and pipelines. And they are absolutely furious over the regulations by the EPA and other regulatory agencies. So their big quest is to get a president and a Congress that will do away with the EPA and do away with regulations so they can foul the air and our land and water as much as they damn well please.
Rubio, for example, said all he had to do to improve the economy was to get rid of Obamacare, which is actually an economic positive, and get rid of financial reforms. So he's talking more broadly than the Koch brothers' oil interests, but it's the same idea. Wow, how do we get the economy going? Well, we undo the financial reforms that were put in after the crash in 2008, or we blame the government for the crash, which is, you know, very indirectly has got some truth to it.
Well, you know, people like the way it was before. Everybody, and that's what you hear a lot of, especially in among the voting folks. So trying to get the young folks to vote, first of all, is a huge priority of the people in this room. But tax at 90%, tax a billionaire. If you like the way it was in the 50s and 60s, if life made sense to you then tax a billionaire, vote union. You know, and put money in education.
The growth rate was higher, Mike. Wasn't the growth rate higher back when the wealthy paid more taxes?
Oh, God, yes.
Under Eisenhower, the wealthy paid up to 91%. That was the highest.
Well, and what the Ron Pauls will tell you, and I guess the other scaremongers, is that, well, when you take all the money out of the economy, when you take trillions and you put it overseas, that's what they're afraid of. That's that the 400 people that you talked about, the 400 families, the money isn't here. So it's not like we can go and take it from them. They've, wherever it is, it's offshore. So they're not taking any of that money, or at least enough of that money, and putting it back into the American economy like they're always telling us that they do. So that's the danger of the oligarchy. Is that they control so much money. This has never happened
before. See, when you get more money, right, Mike, when you get a lot of money, money is power for the oligarchy.
Money and information.
Money and information is power. So the more money that gets concentrated in the oligarchy, the more power they had to concentrate more money in their thing. And we have a situation where...
So you see where I'm going. Not only do they have it, but they're not putting it back in. They're not letting us.
Did you see the list of Bernie Sanders, his list of the greediest corporations and people in the U.S.?
I've seen it, but I don't remember.
I happen to have a list of it.
Well, okay, let's hit it.
He talks about...
names here.
He put together a list of the wealthiest people who have corrupted our system. And he says several of the companies received a total taxpayer bailout of more than $2.5 trillion. From the federal government, from the Reserve and the Treasury Department.
Who are they?
Number one is Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan, who in 2010 paid zero in income tax.
See, that's structuring the tax system. That's what we were talking about earlier. That's the wealthy controlling the taxing system. That's power.
That's power.
At the same time, Moynihan got a $1.9 billion, with a B, tax refund and took a $1.3 trillion taxpayer bailout for his company. If we go on, the income taxes that Bank of America would have owed if not for offshore tax havens, $2.6 billion. Goldman Sachs is number two, the CEO, Lloyd Blankfein. Federal income taxes paid in 2008, zero. $278 million tax refund. Took a taxpayer bailout of $824 billion for his company. And the taxes that Goldman Sachs would have owed, if not for offshore tax havens, was $2.7 billion.
Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, who else?
It goes on. There's number three is J.P. Morgan Chase CEO James Dimon, or Jamie Dimon. Took a taxpayer bailout of $416 billion. And if not for offshore tax havens, would have owed taxes of $4.9 billion. Number four.
Jamie makes him sound cute, but he's not cute, by the way.
Number four is General Electric and its CEO, Jeffrey Immelt. Taxes paid in 2010, zero. $3.3 billion tax refund. A bailout, a taxpayer bailout of $16 billion. And jobs shipped overseas since 2001. 25,000 American jobs. It goes on to Verizon, Boeing, Microsoft, Honeywell, Corning, Time Warner, Merck, the pharmaceutical company, Deere and Company, the tractors and heavy equipment.
So if these guys are not paying taxes, Gary. Mm. Who is paying taxes?
I know I am.
I can raise my hand. I've
right.
never paid
They've
less shift. Than 33%.
Haven't they shifted the tax burden from the wealthy and from corporations onto ordinary Americans?
I pay a lot more than
absolutely.
I did 10 years ago.
I mean, that's what's happened. And that's why, and then they use that to say, oh, we need a really tiny government, and we need to have a government that sort of worships the very, very wealthy and as what do they call them, job creators, Mike?
Right.
Yeah, they're job creators.
Well, I mean,
if nobody has any money, how do jobs get created? You have a business selling widgets. If nobody has any money to buy widgets because the money is all concentrated at the top, it's not really good economics, I mean, in the first place.
Well, I just want to reflect that there is so much happening now. I mean, don't look at this hand and watch this hand. You don't mess with the job creators. We have all this technology. We have all these changes going on. I mean, that Windows 10 commercial is fascinating that your children are going to be talking to all their devices. You know, they show all these little children playing, but the future, the technological future is a sci-fi movie. But the other part of the sci-fi movie are those heads up on the screens, making the corporate heads up on the screens, doing a Skyping the decisions of the world.
Speaking of Microsoft, the CEO last year made $84 million in compensation. I have a list of the 10 largest leaderboards and of the highest compensation, but I won't go into that, but I will say there's one positive, which the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, just passed a rule that would force companies selling public offerings of stock to list the compensation of the CEOs in relation to the average worker in the company.
So one thing we've talked about before is that the amount of money that the very wealthy 1% have, the amount that they owe of the whole United States, has been going up. The difference between the rich and the poor has been getting worse and worse, according to Alfred Stieglitz, who's a Nobel Prize winner. 1% of the American people own 25% of the total wealth. Now, this is calculated. This seems it's worse than that because this is calculated with everybody's house. You own your house in it. 1% owns 25% of the wealth. I think if you took out housing and a car, what would it be?
Yeah.
50, 60%. So it it's a shift. There's been a shift, folks, and wages, and we've talked about this many times, wages for ordinary people have stagnated. Money for the very wealthy has been going up. Corporations have now convinced a whole lot of people that they shouldn't pay taxes. It would be terrible. They've convinced people that if you even look at them wrong, that jobs will go down. See, one of the things, for example, with...
Just to put a number on it.
Sure.
There's a thing going around social media right now that if... You know, so we're not the only ones talking about this. If the oligarchy paid their taxes, $23 trillion, and that there's a sign going, pay your taxes. Who, you know, and list all the companies, Chase, GE, pay your taxes. What would it be? $23 trillion. How much would American life change? How much would education change? How much would the environment change?
Infrastructure.
$23 trillion.
Better Social Security, real Social Security.
And like I said, we'll talk a 15-minute discussion of what $1 trillion is, but we won't. Go ahead. You were making a point.
Well, I was just thinking along the lines you were discussing, Mike, and that is that if you have all the money, you need to control things. The corporations need to control things. So you have something like affordable health care, right? And what they really don't want is a single-payer system. Single-payer system would be Medicare extended pretty much for everybody. It would be much more like what's in Europe. That's the big, deep fear. Right. That's what they really don't want because that marginalizes the insurance companies so that they have Medicare Plus plans. Right. They don't have Medicare. They have Medicare Plus and they have to sell these plans, some of which are very dubious. But it forces them to the edges. So when affordable health care was passed, they basically had to buy off the insurance companies by keeping them in the game.
And pharmaceutical.
And the pharmaceutical companies by keeping them in the game. That's what had to be done to get anything done. So affordable health care is not the best system. And as I think Krugman said, nobody would designed it from the ground up this way if you had a control over it. But that's why it got modified so that it is. And then that lets the insurance companies come back in, and supposedly they're in a free enterprise lockbox where, see, in the old days, you could sell medical insurance and people really didn't understand what they were buying because you could hide all the ifs, ands, and buts, all the questions. Oh, if it goes over 100,000, you don't get any more help, blah, blah, blah. Now it's a level playing field and there should be competition for price. And it helped. I mean, it's not totally wrong, but the problem is, every time we try to do something, we have to compromise with the power that be, right, Gary?
What you just talked about
and
is...
And that power is the oligarchy.
It really explains why the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare began as a Republican idea in the first place and was, you know, essentially the same program instituted in Massachusetts under Romney Care.
Let's the insurance companies and the drug companies keep their profits.
Right.
That's right.
Exactly. And I'd like to, I like statistics. I'll point out one other statistic that, about the oligarchy. And that is the median pay for the top 100 highest paid CEOs at America's publicly traded companies was $13.9 million in 2013, a 9% increase from the previous year. So it's been going up at that kind of a rate, where for those of us ordinary people, if you have any money to invest, you're making, oh, maybe 3 to 5% if you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky. I just think that, what to say about this, there's a very small group of people and organizations that are setting the structure for how things are done. When you look at the political candidates and the donations, as far as we can see them, remember, a lot of stuff is hidden, folks.
As far as
you see an expression of their control over the economy and stuff. So we have elections here. You have free speech here. You can say pretty much anything you want. You just don't have a giant media conglomerate to say it with.
Well, I do want to mention two things. What can you do about it? There's an organization called Investigative Reporters and Editors. You can get their podcasts online. They don't have a ton of money, but what they do is essential. And do they lean a little bit left? You bet they do. They interview people that make documentaries. You can go to OpenSecrets.com, the company that we or the organization that we were familiar with. We went on a little workshop.
It's a journalism organization.
I'm talking about these are journalism organizations. So where can you find out who's running the show? Where can you find out some information and what to do about it? Now, there's got to be something else to do besides get the pitchforks. One of the, Bill, I can't remember which one, said that...
Elect Democrats.
That we are coming. Now, as my children would say, Dad, the Republicans aren't the only ones. They would, and I'm not, but I'm not going to bash Democrats on a show called Democratic Perspective. But
bash them if you want, Mike.
Let's talk
about it.
Well, you can. I'm not. I'm just going to say that you could find some Democrats that have played the same game. That these are the rules of the game.
Well, that's what happened with affordable health care. There were a bunch of Democrats who had taken a ton of money. Hillary's not even a player in this. But some of the other guys, and they held up affordable health care. They held it to ransom so that they had to move it over to the right and keep the companies in. You know, and I've forgotten the guy's name from Nebraska or something. He's just taking the big buck.
Senator.
He's just taking big buck. Those were the real players in modifying the system. So,
but I think
affordable health care is a lot better. Millions and millions of people have good health care now that didn't have it before. It's not perfect.
I want to address the what I consider a false equivalency from the donors and contributions to Democrats.
Okay, how about George Soros? We always hear about George Soros. George Soros, there we go.
And
you can almost tell us about George.
I put it under the heading of the George Soros myth. You know, whenever Democrats talk about Republicans getting money from Koch brothers and Edelman and people like that, they always bring up, but what about George Soros and the Democrats? I looked up his donations. He donated $3.8 million to political campaigns in 2014. But when you look at it, it was mostly in increments of $1,000 or less to mostly Democratic candidates in various races around the country. Hardly something that's going to, you know,
change the outcome.
Change the outcome, yes.
It's just going to oil the system.
Since 1999, he has donated a total of $10.2 million.
Yeah.
The largest amount, a million, was to an organization called MoveOn.org, a liberal group. Again, mostly in smaller increments of $100 or $1,000 or less. By contrast, the Koch brothers donated more than $10 million, the entire total of Soros, to Republican candidates in 2014 alone. That's what we know, and there was probably a lot under the table on the super PACs.
And they're given millions in this election, right?
And they've promised to donate at least $90 million in the 2016 election.
This is a sort of, you know, we're really not the guys who yell the sky is falling, but this could be an emergency if this pattern, right, Gary and Mike, of this pattern of money and politics keep getting worse and worse and worse.
And I'd like to point out that also there's a difference if you look at the Koch brothers and Soros, there's a difference in their expectations for their investment.
That's a good point.
What the Koch brothers really truly do look at it as an investment, so they can, you know, get personal gain and benefit from it. Soros is primarily looking to improve economic conditions, not only in the U.S., but around the world.
I do want to mention Mother Jones before it was in my list of where can you find out the Cocteopus. That was covered, I believe, in Rolling Stone and Mother
We've
Jones.
We've covered it, too.
We've covered it, too. In other words, we sit here and talk about Koch brothers, but we can name a dozen other names of people within the Cocteopus that are in business that also do this stuff. We support candidates.
Like Newt Gingrich was sponsored after his campaign collapsed in the last election, presidential election, by a single billionaire.
Yeah.
A single billionaire funded
candidate. You only need one.
And I really think if you look at those Republican candidates, behind them, each one of them is a billionaire donors. And, you know, some of them are idealistic. They really believe that they should be very, very rich, and other people shouldn't. I mean, well, you know,
I want a billionaire.
Watched the Republican debate last week, I'd like to say we've been talking about the oligarchy all of this time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd submit that if most of those candidates, if any of them get elected to president, we will cross over from oligarchy into what I looked up as a caucusocracy. K-A-K, which is the rule of the stupid, and it will lean into kleptocracy, which is ruled by thieves.
Yeah, a lot of the countries in the world is just a giant. Ruling class stealing stuff because there's not as much to go around.
I
don't know what we do, and we've only got a couple of minutes left. What do you think, Mike? This is kind of, it's getting worse and worse.
We can yell and scream, but
it's just getting worse.
We thank the crew over at Democrats of the Red Rocks for their support. We thank, who's president of Democrats of the Red Rocks right now?
Karen McCullough.
Karen is, okay, we want to thank the Karen McClellans and the Paul Schwartzes and the crew over there. We want to thank Democrats of the Verde Valley to some degree.
We want to thank ourselves. We want to thank Bill Timmerman and Dick Searle and the board of the real contributors to Democratic Perspective.
They have their Democratic picnic coming up October 11th.
October 11th, and the next event for DOOR is in September.
Interesting program. I think on the Verde River. I'd have to.
Oh,
I don't
go to
have
the website.
It in front of me.
Yeah, go to the website. I'm now on the board of the Verde River Valley Nature Organization, so I have lots of information. It's an interesting organization.
And of course, the October picnic. The picnics are always fun.
Yeah,
candidates and good food.
Head
and speeches
up the canyon if you want to hear
auctions.
If you want to hear the other side
games
of things
and stuff. They're a lot of fun. Food's good, and it's very, very cheap. Mike cooks the hamburgers there.
That's right. That's right.
Is that a recommendation
or not?
Yeah, but he's overseen by Bill Timmerman.
Yeah, he's excellent. He's supervised by adults.
After the third beer, I won't guarantee
it is a beer drinking process, isn't it?
It is for the hot grill. What you guys are doing down there, I have no idea. But the food does get down there, and people tell me it's good. And it's a fun day up in Oak Creek Canyon, and we, like I say, it's a lot of information. You want to hang out with the other side, then please come up and see what's going on. There is the small voices that we're trying to go on up there. Don't forget this show, which they are going to use for evidence at our trial, I'm sure, is on VVID.org. All our podcasts, like IRE, like the investigative reporters and editors, and like other shows, we have podcasts on our website. Please go to our website. Please go to DOOR's website and see what's going on with them.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.